1039 1450 WKXL NHTalkRadio.com. Feldis and Kale, proudly presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers. Ken Kale, Dan Feldis here.
How you doing, Ken?
I am doing well. How about yourself?
I'm good. It's a little hot out there.
It is a little hot.
Stay hydrated.
Hot under the collar. That is true.
But that's perfect.
We'll try to keep things cool here.
Nice and cool. Stay cool.
During Feldis and Kale. And our guest today is Rob Werner. Rob is the New Hampshire State Director of the League of Conservation Voters and has now serving his 7th term on the Concord City Council. Councilor Werner chairs the Concord Energy and Environment Advisory Committee, and we welcome Rob to Feldis and Kale. How are you today?
I'm great. I'm staying cool as well, or trying to. At least on Saturday, though, I did run the Capital Classic 10K. It was tough, even at 8 in the morning, particularly up Langley Parkway and around down some other smaller hills on the way downtown.
But I bet.
Yeah, it was pretty humid, but I'm glad I was able to do it, and we had a good turn up. So,
It would be tough for me, no matter what the weather or time of day, to do that.
So, or the track.
Or the track. It wouldn't matter.
Downhill both ways, Ken.
I'd be totally unsuccessful no matter what. But, Rob, great to have you with us. First, tell us about the League of Conservation Voters.
Well, League of Conservation Voters, known by our initials, LCV, is a longstanding environmental nonprofit. We have been around since 1970, so actually just going into our 51st year. LCV has the distinction of being one of the groups that organized the first Earth Day in 1970 at our inception. So we've been around for quite a long time. Our headquarters are in Washington, D.C., we have state operations in about 37 states around the country. We lobby for environmental values and clean energy legislation and climate action legislation and policy in both Washington, D.C. and around the country in state capitals. Here in New Hampshire, we have a very robust team. We have 10 full-time staff, an office in Manchester and an office in Portsmouth. And we're quite involved in State House climate energy policy in Concord, and also do quite a lot of work with our congressional delegation to lift up their work in terms of climate and energy. And as you're well aware, we have a very supportive congressional delegation here in New Hampshire on many of those issues.
Rob, at the state level, always enjoyed working with you. You did great work. LCV does great work, and for the three terms I served in the state Senate, all three of them I served on the Energy and Natural Resources Committee, and we got a lot done. Some of the things that we got done included community choice, aggregation, Community Power Act, my bill I sponsored, Senate Bill 286, a couple years ago. There's a bill this year that improves that, House Bill 315, and it adds on to it a increase in the net metering limit for many public projects. You've worked on that. Can you tell listeners a little bit more about it and a little bit about the status of it?
Well, sure. Thanks. That's House Bill 315 is an important bill that's heading to the governor's desk after getting final approval last week in the House. And indeed, it adds the net metering expansion component. So let's start with the community aggregation and community power. Concord is very interested in joining the coalition that has been created around community power, and essentially it is gives communities an ability to work not only within a particular community but potentially with other communities in the surrounding area on a bulk purchasing kind of program and approach around energy, really to try to get the best price and to drive the continued development of renewable energy sources. So we're excited about that. We're just starting that process and talking with the coalition. Of course, we'll be talking about the coalition's activities and possibly joining it later this summer at City Council. So that process is underway. As far as the net metering aspect, it's really important. As you well know, in the last several sessions, many of us, including herself, had advocated for increasing net metering from 1 megawatt to 5 megawatt, really for all entities, really across the board. We weren't able to do that. Passed the legislature, governor vetoed it. Two times the override failed in the House, a very slim margin, 6 votes. But this year, again, heading to the governor's desk, 315, it's significant that this expansion of net metering from 1 megawatt to 5 megawatts for municipalities, school districts, counties, I think is really going to make a big impact. And just to give you a real-world example here in Concord, for a number of years now, pending this policy change, we've wanted to put a 5-megawatt system solar array on our capped landfill on Old Turnpike Road. That can accommodate that large system. That's important for Concord because, along with a number of other communities in the state, we've made a commitment to 100% renewable energy generation by 2050, electricity by 2030. The first step to getting there is to get to a situation where all of our municipal electric needs are served by homegrown renewable energy within the borders of Concord. So from a megawatt point of view, our electric bill in Concord for municipal side city operation is about 7.5-8 megawatts, somewhere in there. So if we can put a 5-megawatt system on the landfill, maybe some other systems around the city on solar, and also take advantage of small hydro that exists in Penacook and Boscawen, that's possible, then we can completely cover our electric costs by homegrown energy that's in our city, and that's the first step. And we think we can do that in the next year and a half or so.
Well, the value is certainly there, and the prospect and the opportunity to reduce property taxes, promote clean energy jobs, and open up access to solar savings, as well as combat the climate crisis, all wrapped into one, is part of this. And Rob, part of House Bill 315, as I mentioned, the Community Power Act, improving that. Governor Sununu signed my bill, Senate Bill 286, a couple of years ago on that. Fair to say that part of it is fine with the governor. The net metering portion, though, that you just spoke of, three different pieces of legislation, bipartisan pieces of legislation, were vetoed by Governor Sununu on net metering. Has he given any indication whether or not he'll sign House Bill 315? You know, obviously prior, at least on a couple of those bills, we thought the indication was he was going to sign them, but ultimately he vetoed them. So where is the communication with the governor's office, and is there any indication that Sununu will actually sign this?
I have every expectation that he'll sign it. I haven't heard anything otherwise, talking with our allies who have worked on this, and somebody like Cliff Belo, who's the assistant mayor of Lebanon now, but former state senator and PUC commissioner, was very involved in sort of the final details of agreement between the House and the Senate. So we really do have an expectation that the governor will sign 315, and what was certainly communicated to advocates and to some legislators throughout the session, that he was supportive of this limited expansion of net metering to municipalities, school districts, and counties. I mean, here from Concord, too, we'd like to see our school district take advantage also of this opportunity, particularly as they construct a new building, possibly. Let's make that 100% tight in terms of, you know, being a LEED certified building, energy efficient. Let's put solar on it. So that will now have an ability. I mean, this whole thing really, in terms of the ability to do it, has a lot to do with economies of scale and being able to really make it possible to have these larger projects and that they're viable. So this is good news. It also, I think, should be seen not only as a clean energy aspect in terms of policy, but also it's an economic development and investment aspect in terms of the types of investments that are coming that will come into many communities across the state, right, and, as you point out, create jobs.
Guest today is Rob Werner. Rob is the New Hampshire State Director of the League of Conservation Voters. We'll take a quick break and be back with Rob right after these words. It's Feltus and Kale at 103.9. 1450 WKXL, NHTalkRadio.com, proudly presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers. 1039 1450 WKXL, NHTalkRadio.com. Feldis and Kale back at you. Presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers, always concerned with the environment, as is our guest today, Rob Werner. Rob, the New Hampshire State Director of the League of Conservation Voters. And, okay, I'll admit it. I'm sure a lot of people in our audience heard the first segment of the show and are asking, what is net metering? I don't know what it is. I couldn't explain it. So what is net metering and why would it be so important?
Well, net metering really is an ability for power to be set out onto the grid and to be used in a much more of a community basis. And there is a value that's attached to it. But it makes large projects viable to be able to blow these electrons into the grid and basically have them exchanged throughout the grid. This policy that we're talking about is really important. We couldn't build this project that I'm describing or any other larger project in Concord, nor could other communities do so without this change in policy from the 1 megawatt to the 5 megawatts. So it is a real spark in terms of the kinds of investments we're going to see, the impact on economic development, investment in energy generation is going to move us away from fossil fuels, continue to help do that. So it's really an important policy change.
So basically the upshot is there's nothing that prevents right now from solar arrays 2-3 megawatts on municipal land. It's that the excess generated from those arrays can then, if this is passed and signed, it is passed, if it is signed, can the excess generated can go back on the grid, basically.
That's right. And as you point out, there are some larger projects that we're going to see in New Hampshire that will have the effect of greening the grid that we're talking about. There's a 10-megawatt project that may come into Concord. We changed some zoning to allow that, so we'll see how that happens this year and next. There's other projects around the state that are pretty large in terms of megawatts, but those are not net meters, so to speak, but they do green the entire grid. Remember, all of the six New England states are on a single grid, so anything that that greens it, that provides more clean energy, is a good thing.
Absolutely, and one of the things that you hear about is the high electric costs here in New Hampshire, and I think we've talked about in prior programs, but the value of some of these local distributed generation projects and shaving our peak demand. Our peak demand here in New Hampshire is what drives the allocation of regional transmission costs to the state of New Hampshire. And when we're not shaving peak demand and other states are, Ken, Rob, listeners, we're getting whacked with those increased regional transmission costs. So these projects are so important, not just, as Rob pointed out, for jobs and for easing local property taxpayer burden, but also for electric costs.
Well, absolutely right. I mean, the fact that we are not at current time keeping up with our neighbors as far as investments in energy efficiency. We can talk a bit about what's going on at the PUC in terms of the energy efficiency docket there. That has a real impact. The fact that we fail to invest the revenues from the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative program that we've been part of for so long into energy efficiency while all of our neighbors are plowing millions of dollars into energy efficiency programs across the board has a real negative effect on our ratepayers. And, so many people talk about, we have to protect the ratepayer. Well, one way to protect the ratepayer, which we're not doing, is investing in the energy efficiency programs in a real, sustainable, significant way. And that needs to change.
No doubt about it. And let's talk about what's going on at the Public Utilities Commission, because, this really befuddles me because, having served as a legal aid lawyer and litigated at the Public Utilities Commission on behalf of low-income ratepayers, including advancing energy efficiency programs for and weatherization programs for the low to middle-income folks around New Hampshire. When you make an agreement when a bunch of people get together and they have differing opinions or differing stakeholders and they come together, forge a compromise agreement, 9 times out of 10, maybe even more, 9 times out of 10, the Public Utilities Commission signs off on it. When it came to the Energy Efficiency Resource Standard, the next couple years of energy efficiency programs in the state of New Hampshire, the Public Utilities Commission is dragging its feet on a compromise, Ken. A bunch of people came together, private sector, public interest, different groups, signed a compromise, and they're dragging their feet on it. What is going on with that, Rob?
Well, it's really frustrating, and it has a real practical effect on communities across the state, but particularly now in Concord and Hanover, because both of our municipalities, we initiated weatherized programs. So I think many folks are familiar with New Hampshire Saves, and the utilities are involved in, in those programs. So we launched a weatherized program under our, the work of our energy committee, where we wanted to weatherize at least 80 homes this year using those programs. And we had, people might have noticed, there were banners across Main Street announcing this program in March. And then we had a lot of people sign up. We assumed that we were assured that we should go ahead with this program. That should be fine. But the PUC has not come through with the funding. Even as you say, the agreement was made. And what the practical impact of it is that, you know, the program has been suspended in the interim. We have over 100 people now in Concord lined up for weatherization projects, audits, projects. So we exceeded our goal already halfway through this year, just a few months, you know, into the program. But we really can't proceed with it at this point because we need the PUC to approve the program. The PUC was missing a commissioner for a time, but they have a new commissioner now that was confirmed by the Executive Council. But you might recall back in the beginning of the session, back in January, a number of legislators, including the leadership of the House Science, Tech, and Energy Committee, the Republican leadership there, sent a letter saying, given the impact, continuing impact of the pandemic and the economic impact of the pandemic, the PUC ought to basically suspend participation and funding for this program. The three-year funding that you're talking about was the most money that we've really put forward to these programs in a long time. So it's really frustrating. I do think there's some politicization of the PUC by the legislature. I think our consumer advocate, Don Kreese, has also pointed that out. So we just need them to move on an agreement that's already, you know, been put to bed, so to speak, months
yeah.
ago.
I mean, the reason why you get, the reason why you're appointed to a commission is because you're supposed to be acting independently and doing the public interest and consistent with existing statute. You don't respond to a letter from, quite frankly, wholly uninformed lawmakers who don't know the impact of what they're saying about people who are not going to be able to weatherize their homes in the wintertime and be able to get home safety measures too on the home energy assistance program, low-income folks, or businesses who are relying upon this, the disruption to the marketplace. These guys don't know what the heck they're talking about, Rob.
Well, and it goes back to, I think, it seems to be part of the human condition, perhaps, which is, you know, we are talking about, sometimes people talk about the here and now versus making the investments on the front end. And we all know that making public investments on the front end in terms of infrastructure, energy efficiency, multiplies many more times than even the cost of doing those things. So, you know, these energy efficiency programs, we all pay for them because we have on our bill something called the systems benefit charge.
Yep.
And this three-year program that everybody agreed to was financed by a very slight increase in the systems benefit charge. And this is what these legislators are saying. Oh, this is just a financial burden that is going to cause additional economic dislocation for, you know, businesses, ratepayers, and our citizenry. And that's just not true, number one, in terms of the cost of it. And over the long-term investment return that you get from making investments on the front end to, I care about the next quarter or two as to what, you know, what is the actual dollar impact. There's no comparison. So it's unfortunately become ideological, I believe, and political in that regard. I just hope that common sense will prevail over the next couple of months and we can get this program at the PUC put back on track so that folks in Concord, Hanover, and frankly other places around the state that are looking for energy efficiency projects, so it's going to help them every day reduce their energy consumption as a person. We got to get this done.
Got to get it done. It's so important for our future. It's for jobs, for people living in their homes, for businesses. You know, look, you know, respectfully, the commission needs to do its job. I mean, not respond to a letter. Have a knee-jerk response to a letter from wholly misinformed lawmakers on the right-wing fringe. Look, let's switch gears a little bit. Concord City Council, you've been there seven terms. What do you see is going on locally? What are some of the hot topics coming up here in the city of Concord that the council's taken up?
Well, certainly we always are wanting to make sure that we have a good business base and that we can expand, continue to expand our tax base because, you know, in New Hampshire, given our tax structure, that is the one thing that we have control over to some extent is trying to, you know, expand our tax base to maintain a property tax value and limit increases. So we're always looking for economic development. We have good things coming down the line for that. And I think that, you know, Concord over time has been nationally recognized year after year for our fiscal management. And I really have to credit our Tom Aspel, our city manager, and the team that he has hired and works with him. But we want to make sure that our economy is well positioned. One big issue, really, not only for Concord, but really across the state, is housing. We have such a low vacancy rate. Apartments are very expensive. You've seen our real estate values shoot up. I wonder how long that's going to last in terms of being a bubble. I think nationally, New Hampshire, Manchester, and Concord in particular are ranked as some of the, you know, areas where increases have been in values have been the largest. But I think that we're going to need to pay more attention to housing and a mix of housing in terms of market rate and if you want to call it workforce housing, because many communities around the state are in a position of pricing out the people who could continue to live there and work there.
Rob, you know, you talk about the economy in Concord, and you know, I know the pandemic had you know, a negative impact on so many people, but to look for a positive created by the pandemic is the fact that there are so many now. You walk up and down Main Street, there are so many outdoor dining venues, some, you know, that were in existence prior to the pandemic, but a lot that weren't. And I think it's making downtown Concord as vibrant as it's ever been right now.
Oh, I would agree. In fact, you know, I was my spouse and I were up a few weeks ago biking in the White Mountains, and we came across a farm and we talked to these folks there, and they work in Littleton, and they were talking about, you know, singing the praises of Littleton, which I think is also a great town. But they were saying, you know, we've been down to Concord, and I want to tell you, we had gotten this discussion, and I indicated that I served on the council. But I want to tell you, Concord is really so different than it was 10 years ago. It's vital. It's a lot going on. We really like what you've done. I think that, you know, you go downtown even on a Sunday, and you'll see it's packed. And that's just terrific. I think that, you know, the downtown project has turned out to be tremendously successful. And, you know, we want to make sure that that success and small business support flows off the main business corridor into other businesses that are located not necessarily right in the downtown core, but those businesses continue to grow too. And we're starting to see more and more of that as well in neighborhoods, which is a really good sign.
No, it truly is. And I know, unfortunately, there were some businesses that were lost in the downtown area and other areas as well of Concord. But it is so great to see on a summer afternoon, a summer morning, evening, or even or a summer night where, you know, so many people are taking advantage of how great downtown Concord has become. And really, kudos to everybody for you know, generating that that excitement and enthusiasm downtown, because it really adds to the, you know, the vibrancy of the city. No question about it.
Yeah, I think, you know, businesses, particularly restaurants, are low margin businesses traditionally, and it doesn't take a lot for them to get sent over the edge economically. So we've seen some of that, but we're also seeing new restaurants and businesses come online downtown and other places around the city as well. So, you know, that's part of the economic cycle too.
No question about it. Rob is with us. Rob Werner, who is, you know, the New Hampshire State Director of League of Conservation Voters, serving his seventh term on the Concord City Council. So you have seen a lot of changes over the years. So you speak from experience.
Yes, thanks, Ken.
Yeah. You know of where you speak, for sure. There's no doubt about it.
And let me say something about my colleagues, too, in the council for all this time, and Mayor Boulay. I think when the history of Concord is written in future years, folks are going to look back at the tenure of Mayor Boulay as one of great transformation. I firmly believe that he's been a transformational mayor for this city. A real leader in so many ways. And I'm grateful to serve with him. And our council, we have our differences, but we get along pretty well. There are some other communities around the state, and certainly in the media, where that is not necessarily the case. There's a lot of sort of drama. Not to say that Concord is without drama, but we work well together, and I think it's all to the benefit of the city and our city.
Well, no question about that. And Mayor Boulay, great leadership, a lot of wonderful members on the council. And getting back to that Main Street project, you know, Mayor Boulay, the council, and also Senator Shaheen getting that Tiger Grant to help get that all done. And the city, Rob, has been active advocating on key issues. I mean, the city got involved, intervened in the Northern Pass. You know, the city, you may recall, got involved in the whole Concord Steam thing. You know, it's not afraid to step up to the plate and advocate for its residents, and including in controversial type of situations. Is there any discussion, I know there is in some communities around the state, is there any discussion about this issue in the budget, the ban on discussing divisive concepts in the public sector? Has there been any discussion at the council level about that?
Well, there's always been discussion about it. We did not take up a resolution really pushing back against that in recent months. But we, as the city council, are going to be entering into a program run by the National League of Cities that really has a lot to do with racial justice and equity, not only for the council, but, you know, really for our employees across the board, so that there's a much better awareness and sensitivity in terms of those issues. And I think that's important, to actually invest those dollars into that kind of discussion and training. That'll be coming to the fore. You'll be hearing more about that soon. But I think that's an important initiative.
And for folks coming up here, 4th of July fireworks, when are those, Rob? And when, you know, and assuming it's all set and ready to go.
It is all set. It's on the 4th at dusk.
At dusk. All right. Memorial Field?
Yes, that's where it's going to be taking
as
place.
As usual. Yep.
Yeah. 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 And Tom Aspel, actually, when we, City Manager Aspel, when we enacted the budget a short time ago, made note that the fireworks is in the budget. So.
All right.
Outstanding. Outstanding. That's the kind of an event that really, really brings the community together. It really and truly is. So that is great news and great to hear.
Yeah, we're really looking forward to Market Days, too, in August.
Yeah, in August.
That'll
yeah.
be a really good, a very good opportunity for folks to get to know Concord and have a good time.
Absolutely. What is Market Day set at in August? What are the dates?
19th, 20th, and 21st.
Okay, 19th, 20th, yeah. and 21st.
So you haven't missed them, folks. They're normally in June, yeah. but now this,
right,
this
next
year,
year no, yeah. it will go back to June yeah. in 2022.
Yeah. So, see, I bet a lot of people said, "Oh, Market Days was canceled, or we missed Market Days," but not true. It's still ahead. So
you heard it right here on Feltus and Kell.
Right here, not
breaking news.
Breaking news, right here on WKXL. And Rob, for those people who want to get more information about the League of Conservation Voters, where should they go?
Well, they should go to our website, lcv.org, and you'll find all sorts of good information there about clean energy, climate action, and our work with the federal administration on these issues. We certainly are looking forward to continuing to advocate for infrastructure plan that's in discussion right now, obviously, but other clean energy initiatives coming forward later this summer in Congress.
Outstanding. And are there volunteer opportunities as well?
Absolutely. Our folks are working with our members. By the way, we have over 30,000 members in New Hampshire, which gives us an ability to mobilize our members on behalf of the issues that are important and to share our values. But we'll be out and visible. That's one of the things that, I'm very proud of our team. Over the last year, we've done a lot of events virtually. It's worked out quite well. We worked in last year's campaign virtually. We do endorse candidates. LCV does do that because we feel that it's very important that at the local, state, and national level that leaders are elected that share our values. That's the way you get policy done. But we're going to be moving into much more in-person activities now over the summer and fall, so we'll be visible around the state.
Outstanding. Well, Rob, we appreciate you being with us today on Feltus and Kell.
Thanks. I really enjoyed it, and I'm glad to be on your program.
Thanks, Rob. Take care.
Thanks. Take care.
Bye-bye. Rob Werner, and Rob, as we mentioned, the New Hampshire State Director of the League of Conservation Voters, serving his seventh year as well on the Concord City Council, knows what's happening here in the capital city, including the fireworks on the 4th of July. And Dan, stand by, because we're going to have more fireworks news coming up right
here.
I
can't wait.
103.9 1450 WKXL, NHTalkRadio.com. Feltus and Kell, proudly presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers. 103.9 1450 WKXL, NHTalkRadio.com. It's Feltus and Kell, a delight to have you along with us. And we wouldn't be here if it weren't for the Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers. We did mention, Dan, in the previous segment with Rob that the fireworks would be back in Concord on the 4th of July at Memorial Field, which, by the way, is so well maintained.
And absolutely.
It has
no doubt
been
about
for
it.
So many years. It's a great resource in the city of Concord, but that's where the fireworks take place, mostly every 4th of July, and happy that it's back for 2021. Also, and I know you spent a little time in Hampton in recent weeks, fireworks are returning to Hampton Beach.
All right, good.
After the first two shows of the summer season were canceled to protect the endangered piping plovers.
Heard about that.
That are nesting at Hampton Beach. Now, the first show at Hampton is going to be coming up If you're listening on Tuesday, it's coming up tomorrow, Wednesday, June the 30th. And then 4 days later, there will be a special fireworks display on the 4th of July at Hampton Beach. And the Hampton Beach Village District Co-Marketing Director, Lisa Martineau, said, "We are excited to just be able to have fireworks." And, you know, they've had a lot of displays over the years, but the first two shows were canceled this year after two pairs of plovers nested at Hampton Beach, one across from A Street and another across from Bernie's Beach Bar, which you probably saw on Hampton Beach Boulevard. Plovers are protected by both state and federal endangered species laws. Anyone found guilty of harming or harassing or taking a piping plover or one of its eggs may face criminal prosecution and fines. But Hampton Beach Village District Commissioner Chuck Rage said they have been patiently waiting for one of the nests to hatch with the hope that the plovers would move away from the fireworks areas. And on June 22nd, the chicks near Bernie's hatched, and 2 days later, the plovers, as wildlife officials predicted, shepherded the chicks to areas of the beach that have lower human densities and away from the fireworks areas. So fireworks set to go. The piping plovers have done their thing and are out of harm's way now. And we can proceed with fireworks at Hampton Beach.
Another reason to celebrate.
Another reason, of which there are many to celebrate for sure throughout the Granite State. It's Feldis and Kale. It's a delight to have you with us, as always. And we're on every weekday morning at 11:05, right up until noontime, and at other times as well throughout the week and weekend hours. So a delight to have you with us. If you you know, have any guests that you'd like to have on the program, please let us know about it. We would love to hear from you. My email is kcailradio@gmail.com. If you want to email me with any ideas, feel free.
And my email is danfeltes@gmail.com. danfeltes@gmail.com.
That's pretty easy.
That is pretty easy.
Very easy. So
lucky I got it.
Let us know.
Yes, not yes, a lot of Dan Feltes out there.
You have pull anyway. You would have gotten it even if there were
yeah,
a lot
figure,
of Dan
figure out how to do.
Out there.
Yeah, I can really muscle those big tech guys. Yeah. Right.
Well, we are going to talk about something. You know, Dan, sometimes, you know, I've loved what I've done for years and years, and that's being on the radio. I've had
yep.
a chance.
You have an amazing career on the radio.
I don't know about that.
Well,
thank you. But, you know, it's been a lot of fun. And, you know, I always say to
the
people.
The show's fun.
Yeah, the show was fun as well. I always say to people, though, you know, it beats working for a living. if you call it a living. But I'll tell you what, though. After hearing some news over the weekend and reading about some salaries of other workers in a line of work that, could have been suitable to you or I if we had pursued it more in our youth, then, you know, we'll talk about that in a minute. I know you're curious to find out what I'm talking about. Sometimes I don't even know what I'm talking about. But we'll take a break. And we're at 103.9 1450 WKXL, NHTalkRadio.com. Feldis and Kale, proudly presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers. 103.9 1450 WKXL, NHTalkRadio.com. Feldis and Kale, proudly presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers. And, you know, I think 99% of my professional career in broadcasting, I said, boy, I'm glad to be doing what I'm doing. You know, never made huge money doing what I'm doing, but always had a great time, enjoyed it, never really dreaded going to work, no matter where it was. But you know what, Dan? This is one instance where I think I might have taken the wrong path. After I read this story, this is from Forbes.com, I'm just going to read this briefly verbatim. Being a lifeguard in California can be unbelievably lucrative. If we had only known, many of us would have packed our bags and headed west for a career on the California beach. This is from Forbes. Now, our auditors at OpenTheBooks.com found that lifeguards make a fortune in Los Angeles County. Seven lifeguards, I get this, Dan, seven lifeguards in L.A. County made more than $300,000.
Wow.
Annually. And 82 lifeguards had total earnings that exceed $200,000 in 2019, which was the latest year available. Fernando Boitois, well, I believe that's how his, I don't know how his name is pronounced. It's B-O-I-T-E-U-X. It doesn't matter. Fernando was the most highly paid. He earned as a lifeguard, Dan. I know it's an important job.
Yep,
it's an important job. $391,971 as the acting chief lifeguard. He out-earned 1,000 of his peers. His salary now was $205,000. Perks, a little over $60,000. And benefits, almost $126,000.
Wow.
And great views, too.
Yeah.
I mean, not only of the ocean, but other things as well. The second highest paid, Captain Daniel Douglas, pulled down $140,700 in base pay and a whopping nearly $132,000 in overtime pay, with $21,000 in other pay and $74,000, nearly $75,000 in benefits. Total compensation, $368,000, almost $369,000. And overtime pay driving some of these people into the corporate executive range.
Wow. So what you're saying is,
I should have, you know, been more diligent in my swimming lessons. I love to swim.
It's never too late, Ken.
Yeah, it is for me. Yeah, I think it is.
But I think it's probably too late for me, too. I mean, I also don't do very well in the sun or heat. My Irish.
I hear you. Your complexion is not conducive to that. But 31 lifeguards in Los Angeles County made between $50,000 and $131,000 in overtime.
Wow.
During the year. But anyway, I digress.
That's some major money.
It is for lifeguards. I mean, I am certain. I can say almost without equivocation, Dan, that probably all the lifeguards in New Hampshire, if we put all their pay together,
Fernando's.
Probably not. Probably not. If you put them all together, I would have to say. And it's just, you know, as important a job in New Hampshire as it is in California.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, those lifeguards on Hampton Beach or wherever they may be at, you know, on Lake Winnipesaukee or wherever, you know, lifeguards have an important job. I mean, they do, you know, let's face it. They do have a lot of idle time, but, you know, you just never know.
Right,
when that
right.
situation yep. is going to occur. You need a lot of sunscreen, so that must be some of the benefits. Maybe they get free sunscreen.
That's part of the benefit package.
Yeah, and, you know,
free
bathing suits, you know, and all that sort of thing. So,
yep.
But anyway, I never knew it was that lucrative to be a
apparently in California. Apparently in California, LA County.
Probably not so much here in the state of New Hampshire, but we applaud all the lifeguards, whether they make, $400,000 a year, you know, or, you know, whatever they may be making.
Thank you to all the lifeguards out there. And folks who are listening, if Ken is not back next week, you know he's in California training to be a lifeguard.
I would need to have a lot more bronzed body than I have right now. And be in a little bit better shape, too, I would have to say. But nonetheless, it was astonishing for me to hear that they were making so much darn money. I mean, it really was. But at any rate, we're heading down the home stretch of this program. And Dan, any parting shots here as we have less than a minute to go?
No, not really. I would just encourage people to continue to stay hydrated. You know, it's hot out there. It's hot out there. And lastly, that budget, wow, that's a right-wing budget that was signed by Sununu late in the day on Friday. You know when you sign a budget, Ken, you know when you sign a budget with no press and no social media on 5 p.m. on a Friday that you're pretty embarrassed to sign that budget.
Okay. Well, we'll get into that more on the next Feldes and Kale.
You got it.
Program. I promise you that. We didn't get to engage in that today, but we'll certainly do it next time right here, proudly presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers. Join us next time for Feldes and Kale on WKXL.